There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to another edition of the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, as always, my co-host and producer, Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Hey, diddle.
Hey, Tim, we got a really cool guest coming on here this evening. You know, there's such an onslaught of horror movies that have been coming out over the last 10 years, and it seems like they're remaking. I don't know if you just heard the news, too. A couple weeks back, they announced that Rob Zombie is going to be remaking or reimagining the Halloween series. They just released The Omen back on June 6th, the new version of The Omen. But I think probably one of the most classic horror movies out there that I don't ever foresee them remaking, at least I hope they don't, because the first one was so perfect, was The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people are familiar with Linda Blair and Max von Sydow that starred in that movie. There was another fabulous actress that was a part of that movie, and she's known more as like the demon face that you see that pops up throughout the movie. She was also Linda Blair's stand-in in a lot of the scenes. She's been a fantastic actress. She's been in the winning movie of the week for Emmy for Helter Skelter. She's also done stints on General Hospital and quite a few other movies. I know she's been working on a few other horror movies up and coming here in the future. With us this evening, our guest is Eileen Dietz, and as I mentioned, she is from the Oscar-winning film The Exorcist. She's done the Emmy-winning movie of the week, Helter Skelter. She's just a phenomenal lady. Got a chance to meet her last year at Penn State and listen to her do a discussion with Lou Gentile from The Lou Gentile Show. She has had some strange experiences that actually occurred during the filming of The Exorcist, so we have her on hand to talk to us about that. But she also lives in an old haunted monastery in California with her husband. Eileen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. But first of all, first and foremost, I have to correct something that you said.
Please do.
And it's a popular misconception, but I was never a stand-in for Linda Blair or anybody else. Actually, when you do stand-in work, it's extra work. And I was signed to a principal contract to play the part of the demon that possessed Reagan. And subsequently, I get residual. So you people out there, that people who do extras and background and doubles and all that kind of stuff, they don't get contracts and they don't get residuals. But I actually played a part, and I actually auditioned for it four times and did a screen test. So we just clear up that misconception.
Sure.
I played the part of the demon, and I played Captain Howdy, as you mentioned.
Right.
Popularly known as the Face of Death.
Right. So now, you were the one, you wore the makeup, and you looked like Linda Blair in some of those scenes, dressed up as the demon. Is that right?
Yeah, that was the idea.
Okay.
And when they cast me in the show, they said they were looking for somebody who was small and strong, and about 5'2", so that I would look like her doing the scenes, and you would think that she was doing them, which does sound an awfully a lot like a double.
Right.
But fortunately, I was not signed as a double. I was signed to play the demon.
Awesome.
Which means I've been getting residuals since 1973.
Now, one thing I'm kind of curious about, you know, I've watched all these specials about The Exorcist and the making of The Exorcist and so on and so forth, and they talk about all these violent scenes that Linda Blair had to do when she was made up. Weren't you in most of those scenes when it
mm-hmm.
was the demonic version?
Mm-hmm.
So are they misinterpreting it that she really wasn't the one getting flung around on the bed like that? Or
actually, the person that mainly was flung on the bed was neither her nor me. When you get right down to it, believe it or not, there were like six people that actually played that part.
Oh, and really?
It was Linda Blair.
Right.
And there was me. And then it was Mercedes McCambridge, who did most of the voice. Some of it's a compilation of the three of us, but most of it was Mercedes Cambridge. Then there was the girl who did the spider walk. And then there was what they call the photo double, which is so that she doesn't have to be there when they're lighting up the scenes.
Oh, right.
And then there was a stunt double. And I believe it was the photo double or the actual stand-in that did most of that bed scene and also hurt her back, unfortunately.
Right. Well, yeah, that's what I thought I'd read was Linda Blair was the one that suffered all the back injuries.
She said she hurt her back, too. I mean, right. I wasn't there all the time, so I don't know exactly who did how much of that particular work. I'm just glad I didn't do it.
Well, that's amazing. Watching the movie, I mean, what, Linda Blair was like 10 or 11 or 12 when she did it, right?
She was 12 going on 13.
Okay. And then,
They just felt it would be a lot scarier to the movie-going public if they thought that she did all that work herself. And they were probably right.
Right. Yeah, well, that's what amazes me upon reviewing it, because after I got the chance to meet you at Penn State, I've reviewed the movie a couple times again, and it's seamless. I can't tell when it's not her dressed up in the demonic look.
Believe it or not, our legs are very different, that she has, like, much better bigger calves than I do, and you can look at the legs. She doesn't. I have tiny, tiny little ankles, so you can actually look at the legs. And if you see some of the photographs, that my face is thinner than hers because I'm a little older than she is, and she still had those chubby cheeks.
Oh, sure.
So, but you really have to know where and how and to figure it out. Dick Smith, of course, is the amazing magician of all times, and it was actually through him that you really can't tell anything.
Now, doing
who was what, and also editing. The editor, Bud Smith, just did such a seamless job of it that she never wore the vomiting apparatus at all.
Oh, really?
For instance, yeah.
So that was all
that
you,
was
huh?
Only made to fit my face.
Well, lucky you, Eileen.
Yeah.
You're the one that got the puke on everybody.
There were some scenes like what we called the abuse of the cross sequence.
Right.
I did most of the work, and then the close-up, they cut to her face.
Ah.
So that happened, sometimes. The death scene, I did the whole scene, and then they cut to her face, of course, when the eyes go from her into Father Karras's eyes.
Oh, sure.
So, I did a whole lot of physical work. I guess I did some stunt work. I guess I did all kinds of things, but I worked on the film 6 months.
No, when you got the script for this, did you just read it and think, "What the hell is this? This just sounds horrible."
No, I thought. I got to tell you a story.
Sure.
Talking about the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, that and this is an absolute true story. And by the way, your listeners out there, I'm going to do a little plug. My sister wrote a book called 50 Cents for Your Soul. My sister's a writer, and she's written about 18 books, and her name is Denise Dietz. And the whole first four or five chapters are exactly how I got the part in the movie.
Oh, really?
The book is inspired by The Exorcist, and there are characters in the book that you go, gee, that character sounds like so-and-so.
All right.
And it's a real fun read, and it's about a different horror film. And I always like to say that the first four chapters are exactly like me then, except for the sex.
Oh, okay.
But it's a real fun read, you guys out there. And
the name of the book is what again?
Nothing to do. Go call. Actually, you can just write her website or my contact my website, and we'd be glad to send you a copy with the picture of the face of death.
Awesome. Great.
Only on this network, 1995. Not sold in stores.
And they can go to your website, which is Eileen Dietz, and that's EileenDietz.com, correct?
Right.
Okay, you go there. There's some phenomenal flash photos she has there of the filming of it. Now,
we're redesigning the website, too, but right now we're going to put some more recent stuff up there. But go on. I was going to answer your question.
With the movie, then, so you got the script, you're kind of reading over this, and you're finding out, like I said, you watch it on the screen, and it's just so lurid and
well,
creepy.
What I was going to say is the first thing that happened that you can read in the book is that I lived across the street in New York City. By the way, we shot the movie, all the movie in New York, except when we went to Washington, D.C., but I went to see a psychic because I believed in all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Still do, except Lou Gentile says that you shouldn't, because it opens up all kinds of darkness, that if you do tarot cards and stuff like that, that you're just allowing people in. And I didn't know that until Pennsylvania.
Right.
I digress. I went to see a psychic, and we were talking, and she said to me, she said, you know, you will be working with lots of light, and you'd be very careful because there are demonic forces at work, and you watch out for yourself. And I went, yeah, right.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And thank you very much.
Sure.
And, you know, she looked just like a psychic was supposed to look, like a gypsy.
Like the old gypsy woman, huh?
Uh-huh.
Sure.
And, you know, Maria Svenskaya, which did all these horror films.
Mm-hmm.
If they ever put a horror channel together, they're going to show these films, that, you know, these old black and white films. But I went out into Central Park, and I went, yeah, right. So in answer to your question, what happened is I went to see the casting director. I got the audition. I went to see the casting director, and she said, go home and read the book. So I went home and read the book. And I found the book to be just absolutely fascinating.
Right.
And a lot more psychological than the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot more like, well, wait, maybe she's making this all up.
Right.
You know? And then, I don't know, I just did weird things. I, you know, kind of act as you go. I went back there and I did an improvisation for her. I made up the scene of the little girl and the demon and kind of thrashed around on the floor a lot and made it up, which I also did for the screen test. And, after I got the job, I think I auditioned for her like two or three times, and then I went and met Billy Friedkin and Linda Blair and her mother and Dick Smith, and we had a meeting. But after I got the part, I was figuring in my head the only thing I could kind of relate to a demon was animals.
And, oh, sure.
You know, like things like that.
Tim, hold me.
Pardon?
I said, Tim, hold me.
Right now?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. So then I went to my room in my apartment in New York City, and I turned off all the lights, and I lit all these candles, and that's where I thought the paranormal started happening, because I scared myself.
Did you?
You know, I was just really getting into it, and, you know, what a devil would be like, and what a demon would be like, and with all these animals and all these candles and all this flickering light.
Well, why don't we cover more about that, and you can tell us more about the paranormal events.
Yeah, so that, I mean, I...
Well, we'll do that, but let's cut away real quick. We've got to pay some bills around here. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest this evening is Eileen Dietz. We'll be back with more of her fascinating tale right after this.
Adopting aliens and giving them good homes since 1953. Just don't tell our landlord.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
It's Dave and Tim, shacking up in the darkness. On the edge of town.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
When Dave was a young boy, he once awoke to find himself staring directly into the eyes of a shadow person. Turns out it was just his life-size cardboard cutout of Donny Osmond.
Go away and go. Go away and go.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town. Tim, you know, I get more emails about that one bumper than I do anything else, but people don't realize Donny Osmond's just damn scary.
Yes. Especially when he starts into that tune with his sister, you know,
yes.
A little bit country, a little bit rock and roll.
You're listening to the show this evening. We've got a great guest on. Her name is Eileen Dietz, and Eileen is an actress, still working and doing fantastic films. She's been parts of amazing shows like The Exorcist. She was also in the Emmy Award-winning movie of the week, Helter Skelter. She also resides in a haunted monastery in California with her husband. We're going to talk to Eileen here a little bit more about it. As we were going to break, she was talking about how she was kind of setting herself up in her apartment with some candles and trying to get a handle on the character that she was about to play. If I could mention real quickly, now you had mentioned real quick back there a little bit that you had done this and you were, when you went to see the psychic, that kind of opened up doors, you know, according to Lou Gentile. I just want to clear that up for you too, that we've spoken to quite a few experts in the field of demonology, and I guess it probably comes from more where you're coming from if you're opening yourself up for evil things to come through to you. If you're coming from a place of light.
Well, it was very strange because I've done tarot cards and sure. Ouija boards and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I just did it all my life for whatever reason that I grew up that way. And Lou was the first person that warned me and the people I was with that that's not such a good thing to do. And I've never done it since, even at a party where somebody was reading your fortune.
Well, I think, like I said, from what I've learned from everything that's going on out there with a lot of the experts we've spoken about, it's more from where you're coming from. If it's more of a place of light and education, you know, like anything, there's bad people out there and bad things that can happen. You just kind of have to keep yourself protected and guarded. But I would think opening yourself up and kind of dimming the lights, lighting the candles, and trying to get in touch with the inner demon would be more scary and invite into your life than a Ouija board.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. That's definitely not true. I was just saying something like a Ouija board.
Oh, right. I know. I'm just saying.
Or possibly a tarot card, because you don't know who the person is that's handling the tarot card. So you don't know what kind of energy is coming from. Usually it's her. You don't know what kind of energy is coming from that person.
Sure.
You know, you don't know what kind of energy is coming. You know, so I think you just have to be cautious about that. But
good idea.
Then when I was playing, when I do all the horror films that I do, I'm always, you know, talking to the spirit or the light or the God, whatever you want to call it. And I would say, hey, God, this is acting.
Right.
This is a role. I'm not really calling for anybody in my life. This is acting. Remember that. I'm in the makeup room and they're putting makeup on me. So. But that day when I was working on it, I finally had to stop because, I had to turn on the lights because, who knows? Were the candles flickering? Is that what created these strange shadows? Was there really somebody looking over my shoulder? And I know I started getting goose pimples and goosebumps.
Sure.
And just kind of really, really got into that thing. And I finally, I said, okay, I got it. I know exactly where I want to go with this and how it's going to happen. And
did you think this movie was going to have that kind of...
My apartment in New York didn't have guests there, which I also thought before.
You felt that you had ghosts in the apartment that you were at?
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, it was a very, very old apartment house. I mean, it wasn't quite Rosemary's Baby.
Right.
But the apartment places in New York are all kind of very old and all have that sense of Rosemary's Baby about them.
Now, did you have a sense with the movie when you were doing it that this thing was going to be as huge as it turned out to be, or did you think it was just going to be a quick buck for you and it would be in and out of the theaters in a week?
I don't know if I thought about quick bucks back then. We thought it was going to be a very good horror film, but I don't think anybody could have forecast the immense popularity of the movie that is still to this day, 35 years or 33 years later. That the movie was just going to strike a chord.
Well, what perfect PR, too. People are fainting in the theaters, vomiting after watching the movie. I mean, that you couldn't buy that kind of publicity nowadays. I mean, that's amazing.
Can.
Well, yeah, that's true. I guess you can buy just about anything. But
all you got to do is go out and hire some people to do it.
Well, isn't that... I thought that that's what I heard, that that's what they actually did, was they hired some people to react like
that. I heard
that,
too. Again, I wasn't there. But I just did a movie called Neighborhood Watch.
Okay.
Which I think is getting a really good buzz around. It's a really, really fun film.
And that's another...
Very, very gory, but gory with a purpose.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, everything that happens in that movie could realistically happen to you. And they said they had a couple of people faint in the aisles on that movie.
Wow.
Neighborhood Watch. Guys, look for it.
Neighborhood Watch. What did... What were the paranormal events that happened to you during the filming of The Exorcist?
Well, The big one that I love to talk about, and by the way, I'm supposed to be writing the quintessential book about The Exorcist.
Awesome.
And I will get down to do it. We want to get it out before the 35th anniversary, which is in a year and a half. But I was, I guess most people know that they kept the air conditioners down to like they kept the set down to about 10 degrees or 5 degrees below zero. It was really, really, really cold. I mean, really, really, really cold. And that's how they got the vapor coming out of everybody's mouth. But the directors and the cameramen and all those people, they all had wetsuits on, but Linda and I were wearing, obviously, the nightgowns.
Right.
And one day I walked in, I was in there, I was getting ready to work, and it was so cold. I mean, it was just so cold. And I mean, it wasn't cold yet. And I'm just thinking, I can't do this today. I just can't do this today. I can't go into that kind of cold. Please, God, do something. Help me. And the sprinkler system went off and flooded the whole studio. And they had to open the doors and air out the place. And when we shot that afternoon, they couldn't have any air conditioning on because it took all night for the room to get cold enough. Obviously, they had to turn them off because of the sound, but it took all night for the room to get cold enough to shoot. So they shot that day with no air conditioning on. And if you watch the movie really carefully, you'll see that there's a couple frames during one of the possession scenes that there's no vapor coming out of anybody's mouth.
Oh.
So I think there were definitely spirits out there helping me.
Well, that's a good little deal. Not bad to have somebody on your side like that, huh?
I know. The other things that happened were, I mean, everybody knows about, people dying and whatnot. And who knows? So the movie went on for like 14 months, which is an extraordinary long time for a movie to be shot and prepared for. And people die in that amount of time.
Right.
So those kind of things like... we've all heard it. We all know about it. I believe there were two deaths, and a fire. And Billy freaking just—he didn't like the set, so he tore the whole thing down and put a new one up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why there were sometimes during that. But it was nice. I got paid without going to work.
Wow, Tim, we got to figure out a way to do that.
They have to keep you on salary so you don't go get another job.
Oh, sure.
But there were a lot of times that we'd sit in the makeup room, because obviously it took 3.5 hours to put that makeup on, and about an hour to take it off, incidentally. And sometimes you swear that there was a figure, somebody or other, just walking past the makeup room door and looking in. And sometimes we just thought it was the director, and he was just kind of coming around, because... there's a lot of gossip in makeup rooms. That's where people talk. And, you know, you talk with the guy doing the hair and the guy doing the makeup and stuff like that. But then there was nobody there. And we'd all just kind of start, you know, and go, did you see somebody? Did you talk to somebody? So, and then also Billy Freakin had a priest come down and bless the set every morning.
Oh, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
With you inviting all that kind of stuff in, sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure...
were you ever just really frightened during the filming of this? Did you ever just think things were kind of a little too out of control during the filming? I know it's a different world when they're doing cut and print and yelling and, you know, I mean, it looks so scary and realistic on screen, but it's a totally different event. You don't have the creepy music going. You don't have the sound effects. You don't have everything.
Most of the scenes that a lot of the scenes that we did were so technical.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether it was vomiting apparatus that they had to make that work or the levitation that they controlled. A lot of that was technical. I thought it was weirder. The weirder sensations when we did that, the Captain Howdy face.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last day of the shoot. And there was something very weird about that makeup and shooting those scenes.
And the Captain Howdy face, for people that are not real familiar, that's kind of that white... skeleton almost looking face that keeps popping up and flashing on the screen, correct?
With red eyes, and not only that, but it's been on the cover of Fangoria magazine and the cover of a book called The Exorcist, and I've seen people put it on record albums.
Really?
And on their website.
Well, I know we've got it on our website advertising your event. We've got the picture of your pretty face on there, and then we've got the creepy little Captain Howdy face right underneath it.
Why don't you give me and everybody your website again?
Sure. It's darknessradio.com. So for people that are interested in attending, it's darknessradio.com. Check on there. You can click and see who all of our guests are, but we've got the picture of Eileen up with the creepy little face, and I've already had people that have seen you on there go, duh, because we've got the animated one where it looks like you're talking and moving your mouth, so it's... it's nice and a creepy one, but that's why I wanted to have it on there. I thought it was amazing because to see you in person, you know, after seeing the movie, I was kind of expecting this creepy little old woman to come walking along, and here's this beautiful, perky, young-looking lady, and she's just full of light and love, and it was so neat to meet you. I didn't even get a chance to talk with you at Penn State. You and I ended up bumping into each other at the airport.
That's right.
So that was a great opportunity
for
me.
That was
really
quick. I think everybody should call Ryan and tell him I should come back out there again.
Right, with the Penn State Conference, and for people that are familiar or not familiar with it, is coming up in the first weekend in October. So if you'd like a chance to see Eileen, you can go to the Penn State website and email them at PennStatePRS.com. There's links on there, so just let them know that you'd like to see Eileen there and hear more from her.
That would be great.
Yeah, that'd be a great opportunity for people to reach out there. Now,
yeah, because last year they had a couple nice dinners. We were very accessible
right.
to fans.
Yeah, and you guys were.
Come up and talk to us and ask questions and stuff like that. It's even more accessible than doing horror conventions.
Now, at the your website at EileenDeets.com, you offer some autographed memorabilia there as well, correct?
No.
Oh, I thought you had some pictures and such.
I don't have a store.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
I've just never opened the store. I just feel that, track me and find out where I'm going to be or call, your favorite horror conventions and tell them to bring me in.
Sure, and that's a great idea. If you'd like to see Eileen at these horror conventions, and they seem to be popping up more and more, Hollywood collectible shows, horror conventions.
I just came back from London, and then I did Monster Mania in New Jersey, and I did HauntX out here in L.A., and I did Fangoria. And it's been a lot of fun. I went down to Florida and did a show down there, which was the FX show. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun. For someone who played a demon, I'm very blessed.
No doubt.
And I think that all of us that do this kind of stuff and make money doing it, that we're all very blessed.
Well, why don't we talk more about your experiences on the Helter Skelter set in a minute when we come back. For everybody just tuning in, you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest this evening is a lovely Eileen Deets, the actress from the movie The Exorcist, Helter Skelter, and many more. We'll be right back right after this.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, but she moves! She moves!
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way
Thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Jeff Rusterholtz with Edina Realty understands that the housing market is changing, and he's prepared to work with you to put together an aggressive plan to ready your home and help you sell quickly. It's Jeff's goal as your full-service real estate agent specializing in the Twin Cities to provide you with superior service at all times. His local expertise and extensive real estate experience will benefit you whether you're serious about buying or selling a home. By taking time to really listen to your needs and desires, Jeff Rusterholtz with Edina Realty will help you find the home of your dreams. And if you're selling a home, his real estate expertise and many effective marketing programs will give you the exposure and edge you need to sell your home quickly and for top dollar. Jeff prides himself on providing unparalleled service, and he looks forward to developing a long-term relationship with you. Visit him online at movewithjeff.com for more details, or call 651-690-8479 to get started on securing your future. That number again, 651-690-8479.
2006 is here, and for many of you, another year has passed without treating you and your loved ones to a much-needed getaway. Rocky Shores Resort has just what you're looking for. Join owners Jerry and Kim Pip at their family-themed resort that offers a heated outdoor swimming pool, volleyball court, playground, spacious lodge with games and activities for the whole family and more. With 6, 2, and 3-bedroom cabins that are affordable, comfortable, and fully furnished, and 12 seasonal RV sites, Rocky Shores Resorts is perfect for a private escape or for a family reunion. The resorts are located on the east shores of Bowstring Lake in the heart of the Chippewa National Forest. Here you can relax and enjoy nature in the Great North Woods, experience dozens of area attractions, and get hooked on some of the best northern perch, panfish, bass, and walleye fishing in northern Minnesota. Call 1-866-878-0101 to book reservations or check out their website at rockyshoresresort.com for more information. This year, don't ignore the call of the wild. Embrace it and enjoy yourselves. That number again is 1-866-878-0101. Rocky Shores Resort is open year-round. Call today.
If you read Taspara Mag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go
on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
The smell of voodoo hangs in the air. Either that or Dave and Tim had the seven bean salad for dinner.
Don't nobody go in the bathroom for about 35, 45 minutes. Somebody open the window.
Welcome back to the darkness, or whatever is hanging in the air, on the edge of town.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Dave Schrader, your host, along with me co-host Tim Dennis. Our guest this evening in the darkness on the edge of town is actress Eileen Dietz. Eileen is probably most popularly known for the role in The Exorcist. Again, also her Emmy-winning role. She was in an Emmy-winning production of Helter Skelter, which was a movie of the week. And before we went to the break, we were alluding to the fact that there was some crazy stuff that happened during the filming of Helter Skelter for you as well that you felt was a lot more paranormal than even on the set of The Exorcist. Is that right?
Yeah, there was just one night that I played one of the Manson girls. See, people that don't know what Helter Skelter is, because as time goes by, but it was a true story about these girls headed by a man named Charles Manson, who actually spent most of his life in prison. And when they let him out, he said, well, maybe you shouldn't do that. But anyway, he just gathered this group of men and women and fed them a lot of drugs and listened to the Beatles, Helter Skelter, and convinced them to go out and kill some people and try and blame it on other people and start a revolution. And so that's what the brief real story is. And Manson considered himself also a singer. And there was one night that we were sitting up on one of the canyons with a fireplace on Halloween and no moon. And we were all sitting around there singing his songs. And I swear there were other people there with us. They were just, it was so real and so happening. And there were just other people on top of that hill. And I'm not sure if they were the souls of the people that they ended up killing. They came back to visit us. It was Sharon Tate, who used to be married to Roman Polanski.
Right.
She was pregnant, and they killed her. And they were just kind of sitting with us. You just had a sense of and you asked me if The Exorcist was scary. Sometimes shooting Helter Skelter was scary. Because you just got a sense of these lost souls. These people were killed in the prime of their lives.
Well,
and
right, and anytime you're dealing with real life stuff, yeah.
Around and hadn't found either, you know, heaven or hell. Kind of a purgatory. And I hope they rest. I really hope they rest in peace now. With very sore.
Right. Well, I would guess filming a real movie about a real story and a real event, it's got to lend an air just of creepiness to it, knowing that you're portraying somebody that's, you know, still alive, and that was, you know, coming from a place of real pure evil. It wasn't a Freddy Krueger or a, you know, Jason or Michael Myers. This was a real group and a real people that just had no remorse over the murders and the brutal things that they did to people.
Well, yeah. I mean, as time went on, some of the girls did have. A total remorse, and you know, they probably—I mean, that's another whole story.
Right, but at the time, it was
committed these murders if they weren't so stoned and so out of it and stuff. And it was a period of time, but kind of there go the grace of God, you know, go a lot of people. That's a whole different story.
Now you keep surrounding yourself pretty much with different paranormal events. You've been doing primarily horror movie roles, would you say, since The Exorcist that you've been involved in?
And also some kind of horror, too. I mean, when I did General Hospital, I played a character who was in a mental institution for 2 years.
Oh, okay.
So, and even when I did my Happy Days, it was like a girl who was on the outskirts of, you know, the whole Ronnie Howard and...
You were on Happy Days?
Yeah.
Which episode is this now?
I did the episode...
Potsy Gets Possessed? I don't remember that one.
No, this time she was just a woman with 160 IQ. She was just too smart for her own good.
Oh.
And we all got locked inside Ronnie Howard's father's hardware store. They had a vault and, you know, like a locked storage room in the back.
Right.
It's one of their most famous episodes.
Yeah, I totally can remember it now, because weren't they trying to get out through the little window in it?
Well, the door opens, and I think it's Potsy. He gets so excited that he closes the door again.
Oh, right.
And,
that's it.
It's Potsy and Ronnie Howard. Henry Winkler and Ronnie Howard sit there and talk about death. And so, I mean, I'm always involved with death, but they talk about death and dying and the implications of life and stuff like that. And it was just a really fun episode. It was the first live, they call it three-camera sitcom that I had ever shot. And I have it on tape. It's fun to watch it.
Do you?
Everything I've done has always been kind of like on the weird and unusual. I've never played the girl next door.
Well, you should be on that new soap opera. What's it called? Passions. Isn't that all about the paranormal?
I think about that a lot. I don't know if I want to do another soap again. But if I were to do another soap, that would definitely be the one that I would do it on.
Well, that looks like a fun show, too. I mean, they've got the lady from Nanny and the Professors on there playing the main witch, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think they even had Dr. Bombay show up from the old Bewitched show as Dr. Bombay on one of the episodes.
Oh, it's fun. I don't even watch it that much.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it myself, but, you know, not that I dislike it. I've only seen a few
episodes. I'm going to tell my agents that that's the next thing I want to do.
You should, at least, you know, for a couple of stints. Maybe you'll get a nice role as a possessed woman or something. Are you still talking to Linda Blair? Do you still see her or have conversations?
No, we've never really had a conversation. We just never hung out together. And when I was doing General Hospital, she came down to visit a couple times because she knew my roommate. But we just kind of went in different directions.
Well, there was an age difference there too, correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And, so, you know, we spent more time on the set, like in her dressing room and playing games and watching television and stuff like that.
Just from your perspective, do you feel that it ever kind of messed with her mind, the stuff that she was doing with that movie? Did she ever talk to you about it?
I think the only thing that really messed with her mind, frankly, is that she got really bad advice, and she should have, after the film was over, she just should have done Disney. You know, she just should have done family things instead of doing anything that was horrible.
Yeah.
And just played, you know, a bright little cheerful little girl and put The Exorcist behind her, except for conventions.
Yeah, that's true. Because that's got to be a big chunk of popularity there, huh?
Yeah, she does extremely, extremely well at the shows and has for a long time.
Great. Well, don't you ever run into her at those events?
No, we don't do the same shows.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that just doesn't seem to make much sense to me. You'd think that, you know, they'd book one of you, they'd want the other one there, too, so they've got the two faces of evil.
But we either follow each other or... I've never done a show with her.
Well, I'll tell you what we'd like to do, Eileen. We're going to be we're doing paranormal trips with our listeners, where we come out to different cities. We've got one that's coming up here in August in Chicago. We've got one that's going to be in Colorado in the first weekend of November, where we're going to be staying at the Stanley Hotel, which was the basis for the movie and the book, The Shining.
Oh, wow!
And we're trying to work a deal where we're going to go to California in February. And do an investigation there of a couple of really cool haunted spots. We're going to bring anywhere between about 75 to 150 of our listeners out.
Wow.
So, you know, I'd love the chance to maybe have you come out and do a little presentation. Maybe we'll do a screening of The Exorcist and have you out to meet and greet with the listeners.
You could also, I don't think you can bring 150 people to my house, but I live in an old monastery.
Sure.
And my whole block that I live on used to be a religious cult, but I think in the good sense of the word cult. It's just all religious. At the top of the hill is a huge statue of Jesus Christ that overlooks the street.
Oh, really?
And the Ghostbusters were going to come here. And
oh, Ghost Hunters, you mean?
Ghost Hunters, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, and they were going to check out my house. But I'm convinced that, thankfully, that there are all good spirits living in my house. You can feel it.
Do they move things? Do you hear voices walking? What lends you to
they
believe
hide
that they're...
things.
Oh, they do. Okay.
They absolutely totally hide things. It just happened with, also in my car. Anyway, no, they hide things, and I swear. And then they pop up. They're funny. They're nice little sprites.
Do you ever hear things or see things? You know, people walking
all the time.
Really?
And sometimes I think I just think it's my cat. My cat that used to live here, and we had two cats that passed that made the transition.
Oh, sure.
And sometimes I think it's my black cat that I see walking by, and then sometimes I just think it's a spirit. But there are definitely spirits that live here. In the front of our house, we have a sunken bathtub where they used in the front lawn where they used to do some kind of ceremonies and stuff. We actually filled it up because the water would get kind of rancid.
Oh, no doubt.
But there's just all kinds of spiritual things outside the house, too. So maybe if somebody will come and check, and I would love to have someone come and check it out.
Well, we'll put you in touch with the booking people through the Ghost Hunter show and see if we can get them out there to take a look. I know they
that
want to get out into the California
area. They talked about that.
Right, and if not them, I know that there's a few other shows out there that we're talking to that would have an interest in dealing with that and finding more paranormal spots to check out. So I'll certainly keep
you in touch. At the same time, just for
a
little plug, that you asked me what I was doing. I actually finished shooting a movie called Sibling Rivalry.
Okay.
That's going to be out probably in about 4 or 5 months, about two sisters. That it's a revenge film, and they go around killing people. I went from monster to victim.
Oh, okay.
Actually, the last three films I did, I went from monster to victim. I did Creepshow 3, and you should look for that. And I did another film called Sinjin Smith.
Oh, right,
which
right,
is about
right.
About evil versus evil.
Yeah, I've been seeing the ads showing up for Sinjin Smith. When is Creepshow expected to come out?
I heard, last I heard, that it was going to come out for school, either when school starts or for Halloween.
Are they, now, does this one have anything to do with, like, George Romero and
no,
Stephen King's
No, they actually did it on their own, but what they did is they hired five separate writers. There's five episodes.
Oh, okay.
And they hired five different writers to write the episodes. And the word that I heard is that it's very, very good. I know I read the script, and the script is a lot of fun. And I get killed in that one, too.
Oh, Eileen. What's the character you kind of play in this one? Are you, again, the victim?
I play a homeless woman who's an evangelist.
Okay. Well, so you're doing the opposite thing here now, huh?
Yeah, except that it's still based on religion.
Sure.
Anyway. And then I'm going to shoot a movie in August. It's called The Queen of Screams.
Queen of Screams?
Yeah, and it's basically about a woman who's kind of left. You know, she's kind of weird, and her husband opens up a movie theater for her. Because she used to be a very successful actress, and she just shows horror films, and then her husband gets killed, and she just kind of loses it.
Well, maybe what we can do at the event that we do out in California is talk to one of the film companies, and maybe we can even show... one of the things that we were invited to do is, I guess, at the Hollywood Hills Cemetery, there's a group that shows horror movies there.
No. It's Hollywood Forever.
Oh, is that where it is? Hollywood Forever?
Yeah, and they show all kinds of films. I was actually... funny you should mention it, because I was just down there on Saturday.
Oh, great.
Seeing a film, and they have about like 500 people come.
Yeah, that's what we have friends that are part of it, and were telling us that, so that's what we're going to try to make it part of our event, but maybe we can talk them into showing a movie with Eileen Dietz in it and have you down there to do some question
would
and answer.
Would that be fun,
oh,
or
that'd
what?
Be great,
that
yeah.
would be great.
I know.
I'm supposed to shoot another film, too, that if it doesn't conflict, it's called The Silver Scream.
Okay. Well, that's going to be in February. We're looking to come out there. She's going to be a what?
This is about a woman that does horror conventions.
Oh, okay.
so it's all about the horror convention type thing, but this other woman starts doing these murders. It's kind of a horror thriller type film.
Eileen, anyway, do you think maybe you should go do a Disney movie or two?
I beg your pardon?
Do you think maybe you need to go do a Disney movie or two?
I don't know how.
You got to get in there and be the light, happy person I met at the event.
I know, but I don't know, you know, I'm kind of typecast, but it's okay with me.
Well, that's a beauty of it, though, with what the stuff that you've done, and people are familiar with you, and you're such a good actress at it, you should be able to pull off the mom role now.
Well, I should.
Look at the transitions. I mean, you got Eddie Murphy as one of the foul-mouthed comedians of the 80s, and now he's, you know, Dr. Doolittle and all these
you're
loving, happy
right.
family
and
movies.
That's the second thing. I'll tell my agent to look out for that for me.
See, there you go. We're going to get you into this. You'd be a good, you know, like mom for Lindsay Lohan in her next role. What do you think,
okay,
Tim?
Okay, I think that's a good
absolutely.
Idea.
I think instead of Ghost Dad, we should have Possessed Mom.
There we go.
Well, I think I'm supposed to be doing a film called Horrorween, if I could say it.
Horrorween? Okay.
At the end of September, beginning of October. And that's funny. That's a comedy.
Well, how many movies do you do a year?
This year is shaping up to be a real good one.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Holy cow.
This is shaping up to be like four films.
How long does it take you to shoot a film normally?
Well, these are mainly, 4 weeks.
4 weeks?
Yeah.
Wow.
3 to 4 weeks.
Well, and how long did it take you to shoot The Exorcist?
14 months.
14 months. Well, wasn't Linda kind of growing up during the filming of that? Wasn't her pudgy cheeks kind of going away during that then?
Well, they shot the beginning and the end.
Oh, okay, right.
And then as she was being possessed, it didn't matter.
That's
but
true.
They definitely, because the whole place takes place in Washington, D.C., although we shot at a studio in New York. Hmm. And so we were all, they took me out to Washington just to do the shadow that walks across the window when you first see Father Marin.
Oh, sure.
And I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, you have met me, and you know I just love to work.
Right.
I don't care what I do, where I go, whatever. I just absolutely love to work, as long as it's not, you know, immoral or illegal or ethically. Oh,
there goes our paranormal porn thought again, Tim. Dang it, it's just never going to take off. We can't get any good actresses.
It always gets shot down.
When somebody was asked, we were actually having a discussion about what you would do for $1 million and what you wouldn't do for $1 million last night. But it hasn't come up in my life yet.
Oh, okay.
I love to work, and I love to work in small films. I like to work in big films, but I've always been that way ever since I was a little girl. And ever since I was a little girl at 17, I started working.
Wow, you started at the age of 17?
Yeah.
Great. What was your first role that you got involved with?
A wonderful movie called Teenage Gang Debs, as in D-E-B-S.
Sure. Like debutantes?
It was about a girl's gang. It was actually very violent, except that no one had guns back then. We shot it in the 70s, and it took place in the 50s.
Just lots of bitch slapping and pulling hair?
Film.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can find that. That's out on some other, you know, one or another, maybe on Amazon or whatever those things are. You can get that.
And sure.
I did an absolutely wonderful project. A film called David Holden's Diary, which was written up in Life magazine and all these magazines. And basically, it was about a guy who wanted to put his life on tape. And I played his girlfriend and just freaked out because every time I turned around, he was... And it was one of the first films that had an actor looking into the camera and talking about his life. It's called David Holtzman's Diary. Those are the first two projects I did.
Well, that's cool. And how long were you on the TV show General Hospital?
A couple of years. I love doing that.
Was that during
the Luke and Laura years, actually.
Okay. Yeah, Tim and I we were big Luke and Laura geek fans back then, so I'm
I don't know about your listeners, but certainly your parents.
Right.
Everybody watched the show. Everybody sure. took lunch during when General Hospital was on.
Some of us skipped school.
That's right.
What?
Some of us skipped school, Tim said.
That is true. I mean, it was an amazing, amazing phenomenon. It was like doing a nighttime show.
One of us had a crush on Luke and the other one had a crush on Laura, and I'm not going to tell you who's who because it's embarrassing for Tim. I mean, you know, it's...
Oh, sure. You had a perm in
well, the thing that stop. Happened with Heather and me, because we were both in this, locked up in this asylum, she got there because she tried to give somebody acid and killed them. And I was originally there to have somebody for her to talk to. That's what they do on soaps. And we became the two most popular people on the show next to Luke and Laura. Because she was psychotic and I was...
Nuttier?
You know, we were both nuts, but she was really psychotic. And I was just a little emotionally. So we became really very, very popular characters. It was a lot of fun. And we go on tours and some people would like Heather and some people like Sarah.
Sure. So you've
people
got...
People call up and, you know, because I did a lot of talk shows, TV shows, and mm-hmm. people call up and say, how do you know so much about being in a mental institution? Were you in a mental institution? I said, no, I'm an actress.
That's your job. It's kind of like being in a mental institution doing movies, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah.
In fact, the ones that they don't let you out.
Now, what?
So we're shooting 18 hours. You can't go home. I want to go home.
Yeah, I bet. You've got quite a few projects coming up. You're also doing a lot of the events. What's one of the next events that you have coming up that you'll be out to meet and greet the fans at? Do you list that on your website?
Well, actually, because I'm doing these films, no, it will be on my website.
And
it's a new show, and it's going to be in California, of all places. It's going to be at the Burbank Hilton. And it's either called The Big Bang or The Big Something or Other, and it's a multi-genre show.
Oh, okay, so it'll be horror, suspense?
Yeah, it's going to be everything.
Okay, cool.
Which is interesting. I really like to do mostly horror. But we cut back on it this year because I'm shooting these films.
Okay.
And hopefully there's a wonderful, wonderful show. Haunted attractions are really fun to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one called The Silent Forest. Your listeners, again, anybody in the Raleigh, North Carolina area, you should look it up on your website. On their website, it's silentforest.com.
Sure.
And it's a really, really fun show. This is the second year.
Well, we've got a friend of...
If around Raleigh and, you know, that area, travel 20 miles, it'll really be worth it. And hopefully I'm going to be there if my schedule allows it.
Well, we've got a friend of ours up here who's a promoter for quite a few haunted events and haunted houses and paranormal places, so I'll make sure to give her...
I'll give her my number.
Right, give her your connection number so that she can talk to you about that. Cause,
yeah, because I'd like to do more of them. They're really a lot of fun. And
really, if you do have a chance to see Eileen, she's fantastic in person. She's just a sweetheart, very polite, very friendly, and we'll talk to you about her experiences. So, yeah,
you're
that's
talking about me being friendly. I'm not friendly.
You were friendly.
A wonderful day for an exorcism.
See, she even tried to give me a hug, or didn't even try. She gave me a nice hug when she said goodbye at the airport. She's not this scary woman. Give her a job, Disney. Let's see her in some happy family fare.
Well,
Eileen, thank you very much for joining us this evening on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
It was my pleasure, and please invite all your guests that I have on my website that you can ask questions.
Great, yeah.
And the other thing that I would like to know for this book that I'm writing.
Sure.
If any of you people out there feel that you have had, like, a really remarkable experience after having seen the movie, I'm collecting stories from people, and you can be in my book.
Great, and you can do that at EileenDietz.com. That's EileenDietz.com. You can email her there and talk to her.
They can write me at Eileen@EileenDietz.com.
Great. Well, Eileen, thank you again very much for being on the show. Look forward to talking to you again in the future and hopefully seeing you at one of our live events.
I hope to see you up in Pennsylvania again because you're going to be there, right?
Yes, I will be. I'll be at the Penn State.
So hopefully I'll get to see you, Dave, and I'll get to see all your fans out there.
All right.